Hello, and welcome to the 10th episode of Season 3 of the Doc Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Media personality again, then, Graham?
I guess so, Ray.
And a little bit more than the 20 seconds or so you were on the BBC a couple of weeks ago.
Ray, it could hardly have been less. Do you want to kick off by explaining a bit more about what we're talking about?
Why don't I? Whilst I'm sure many of our listeners will have seen during last week, a story broke in relation to the Swedish bank, SEB. For the benefit of those who didn't, SVT, the Swedish public broadcaster, aired a documentary following the leaking to them via the OCCRP of a trove of documents relating to transactional activity by or through non-resident accounts they held in Estonia.
Yes, which sees them following both Danske and Swedbank being dragged into the story.
And that is potentially problematic for them, as they've consistently denied being involved in systematic money laundering out of the Baltics.
Yes, let's come back to that in a minute, as SEB have put out a fairly comprehensive press release which contains a bit more detail than can realistically be reported in the mainstream media, but it is worth a closer look.
Well, I've never thought of us as mainstream, Graham. Just to be clear here, though, SEB weren't just clearing for Danske Estonia through a correspondent relationship, were they? Like say, Deutsche Bank were, and were therefore exposed to the actions of Danske Bank clients that way.
No, Ray, these were SEB's own customers operating through SEB's own branch in Estonia.
Understood. This is a primary exposure, not a secondary one through correspondent relationships.
That's absolutely right. Although the material, as we shall see, that was leaked also identified SEB accounts that either made or received payments to or from other accounts that themselves were identified as part of laundromat activity.
Okay, I see. So how did you get involved?
A few weeks ago, I was invited out to a meeting of journalists over in mainland Europe, as they wanted me to do a presentation for them specifically around UK LLPs and how they're used as part of laundromats.
And why was that?
They weren't saying, Ray, and I've learned not to ask.
That's probably very wise.
I think so. Anyway, after the presentation, one of the guys from SVT came up to me and asked if he could get in touch separately about a story that they were working on.
And of course you said yes.
Of course I did.
What happened next?
We had an initial chat over Skype, and then the SVT team sent over a bundle of stuff relating to the leak for me to look through prior to them coming over to the UK to film.
And that must have been interesting.
Interesting, yeah, but also a bit frustrating.
Why was that?
Well, because it was a smaller leak than some of the others, which presents a bit more of a problem.
So it could have been skewed towards the criminal end of things and misrepresented the problem negatively, or possibly the other way around and actually understated the level of red flag activity.
Yes. Or, of course, it could truly have been representative and accurately demonstrated the issues that they faced.
What did the material contain, Graham?
Well, Ray, obviously I can't talk about it in any specific detail, but there was a spreadsheet with a couple of tabs. One with a bunch of companies' details on direct SEB clients, and one with the same information but for counterparty payments.
And without giving away any details, was it interesting?
Well, yeah, it was a bunch of offshore companies, Ray, dotted with, I'd have to say, a few well-known entity types and addresses that we might recognise.
Ah, OK. Any sunny places for shady people in there?
Yeah, quite a few, actually.
Now, I've been reading the SEB press release and Q&A posted on their website, so is it worth spending a few minutes talking about what they say and maybe contrasting it with what you've seen?
Oh, definitely.
OK, let's start at the beginning. SVT sent the same list that you have to SEB, who acknowledged that the 194 names on it were indeed their customers.
And that's a good start.
It is. And they also say that 95% of these customers have since been terminated.
By which I guess they mean that 184 of them have been exited and 10 have not.
Mm. And would you like to speculate on the nature of the 10 that are still customers?
Not really. without doing a deep and really very thorough analysis of all 194, it would be really tricky to say.
Fair enough. Now, they go on to say that, quote, when SEB has discovered suspected activity, this has been reported to relevant financial police, unquote. Mm. Sadly, they don't mention how soon after the detection of the suspicious activity they made these reports, or indeed whether they made any at all in respect of the 194 companies identified.
Yes, and they might claim that giving the detail now would have constituted a tipping off offence had they done so.
Maybe. That's followed by the standard line, quotes, SEB's ability to prevent, detect and report suspected financial crime has strengthened over time. The regulatory framework has been tightened, awareness has increased, and the bank's routines, processes and systems have improved. SEB is doing its utmost to prevent that the bank is exploited for financial crime. Nevertheless, SEB cannot guarantee that the bank has not or will not be exploited. Unquote.
Mm, yeah. Or in plain terms, we're doing our best, Gov. Honest. We might not always have done so, though.
And, you know, Graham, I can't think of a single financial institution that would, you know, be able to say very much different from that, to be honest. But they do go on to say that, quotes, following criticism from the Estonian Financial Supervisory Authority and information from another external source in 2006, the bank adopted several decisions and measures. A large number of customer relations were terminated, and SEB continuously terminates customer relationships and reports suspicious activities to relevant financial police, unquote.
Which is all well and good, but even a fairly cursory glance at the list of 194 reveals a couple of troubling facts.
Oh?
Well, like I say, I haven't done a deep and thorough analysis, but I can tell you that there's a couple of UK entities in there which were incorporated in 2007.
A year after the date when SEB received their criticism from the Estonian regulator and another external source.
Yeah, which we have to assume to be Andrei Kozlov, who was the former deputy chairman of the Central Bank of Russia, who came over to Estonia in summer 2006 to warn the authorities about Russian money laundering and who was very sadly murdered 3 months later.
I think that's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah, so they were incorporated after the Kozlov visit and the date at which SEB say they started taking action.
And can you tell us anything more?
Well, one of them dissolved in 2009, having never filed any accounts, although their SIC code, their Standard Industry Classification Code, was, quotes, non-trading company.
Then why did they open a bank account with SEB in Estonia if it was a UK non-trading company?
It's a fair question, Ray. Along with asking why SEB didn't notice that they were opening a bank account for a non-trading company.
And the other one?
The other one was dissolved in 2012, having filed 4 consecutive years of accounts, all of which were dormant.
It also opened a bank account with SEB in Estonia, but according to its filings, never did any business. You can't help wondering how much money went through that account, can you?
Oh, I know, but sadly that's one thing I can't tell you.
Okay. So while that's not in any way a proper analysis, no offence, anecdotally it does suggest that there are potential discrepancies here.
Well, no offence taken, but it certainly does suggest that, Ray. So shall we move on? What do they say next?
They say, quotes, although SEB has lived up to the regulatory requirements, given what we know today, we can conclude that neither regulations nor the banking system's ability have been sufficiently efficient to handle risks of money laundering historically. However, since then, the regulations have tightened, awareness has increased, and the bank's routines, processes, and systems have improved. SEB is doing its utmost to prevent that the bank is exploited for financial crime, unquote.
First of all, brilliant to have done that without cracking up. And call me a pedant.
I am available for commercial work.
it was amazingly deadpan. And like I say, you can call me a pedant, which frankly you do regularly. But I can't help thinking that onboarding a UK company which has listed itself as non-trading or another one which files dormant accounts has probably always been a sign that something isn't right, and it doesn't really need a tightening of the rules to tell you that.
Well, quite.
And bear in mind that for the two companies I'm talking about, one also had a Panamanian corporate director and the other a person from Mauritius, so it doesn't paint a rosy glow of safe, secure, local to the Baltics banking, does it?
No, it doesn't. And this is where we come to a quite pertinent but quite odd statement in the Q&A. SEB says, quotes, "The absolute majority of SEB's customers are based in the country where they are customers. However, SEB can accept customers who are not based in the country if there is a logical connection to it. The requirement for a logical connection to the country has been in place for a long time, but have gradually tightened over the years. On several occasions since 2006, SEB has taken action to terminate customer relationships that have not been in line with the bank's strategy." Quote.
Absolute majority.
Yeah, which technically means one more than 50%. Which isn't exactly a wholehearted confirmation. Of course, it could simply be that this is misunderstanding caused by them not having English as a first language or us not having Swedish as our first and having to read in translation. Were you able to find any logical Baltic connections for the two, albeit dormant, companies you've been talking about, Graham?
Ray, other than a couple of company registry websites, they had no internet presence whatsoever.
Either in the Baltic or elsewhere?
Nowhere.
Why am I not surprised?
Shall we move on?
Yeah, probably for the best. There's a long quote from the CEO, Johan Torjeby, which is worth reading in full. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. "But the short story on anti-money laundering in Estonia is really driven about the general interest for parallels being searched for, subject to the Danske Bank situation. And I think that most banks, including ourselves, and the two others in this part of the world who are active, have gone out with similar data to say it's really not for us to be worried about. So we feel very comfortable that what we've done from 2008 until to date doesn't have any real red flags we need to worry about in the comparison."
In the comparison.
Yeah, and that is a bit problematic, isn't it? What does it mean to say we don't have any real red flags in the comparison?
That sounds a bit like saying we didn't launder more than them, so we're okay, and any we did isn't a real problem.
But Graham, a red flag is a red flag. I don't understand what a real red flag is, because it seems to me you've already identified quite a few from the small sample you've looked at.
Yeah, and truth be told, they are the same red flags as we see in the Danske case. Okay, it may not scale to quite the same degree, but they are still red flags. And you should not now or then be onboarding non-trading or dormant companies and giving them bank accounts.
Especially when they're UK companies with Panamanian or Cypriot or Mauritian directors located at letterbox addresses with no web presence and no obvious connection to the Baltic.
But is it okay if it's only one or two?
Well, the short answer is no, given how obvious the issues are. But the long answer is that without a proper transparent review of the Baltic business, we can't be sure. And we all know what happens in the absence of transparency, don't we?
Yes, the void it leaves will be filled by rumours and innuendo.
Okay, now, the press release finished with another quote from Mr. Toyerby. He says, SEB's business model revolves around having only customers, our corporate customers, in our home markets. And they are in Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, the Baltics, Germany, and the UK. The absolute majority of all flows we have that are not Estonian come from subsidiaries in the region with parent companies in one of these countries. And this is what we do. We are also, unlike some other banks in the region, primarily a corporate bank, which means that we have more international flows than a primarily retail bank or a bank for private individuals that is far more domestic in nature. And that, to a large extent, explains some differences.
Germany and the UK crept in there, I see.
But what does that mean, Graham? We know only too well that being a UK company does not mean that it has any meaningful connection to the UK. Might not be owned there, might not operate from there. Its only connection may be that legally it was incorporated there. How did SEB determine whether a corporate customer was actually from the UK? After all, as we revealed in one of our earlier episodes, one account opened by a UK LLP with Danske Bank Estonia received funds from 39 other UK LLPs, all of which banked at the same branch, and none of which, other than a UK incorporation and registered address, had any connection to the UK.
No, but lots with Russia and other Central and Eastern European countries.
Exactly, and it's certainly not clear from the SEB statement where their accounts were really operated from.
No.
And that last bit about being primarily a corporate bank does serve to underline that they ought to know when they're taking on a company which has classified itself as non-trading or is consistently filing dormant accounts, don't you think?
I do.
Okay, well, I think that's probably as far as we can take it for the time being. Should we just summarise?
Yeah, let's do that. So, SEB, through their branch in Estonia, operated accounts for a number of non-resident clients, all of which were corporate, because that's what SEB focus on. And although they have no appetite for businesses that have no connection with the country in which they bank, these ones, these 194, at first glance, do seem to be outside that appetite.
The Swedish broadcaster, SVT, obtained that list of 194 such entities. SEB say they've already exited 95% of those relationships, although we don't know when. They say that their AML approach has strengthened over time, particularly after criticism from the Estonian FSA and information from an external source in 2006.
Yes, but at least some of these accounts came after that time because they are companies that weren't even incorporated in 2006. The incorporation records of at least some of them look like classic shell companies with secret location ownerships and dormant company accounts, despite holding what were presumably active bank accounts.
SEB say they report suspicious activity, but haven't clarified whether they've made reports on any of these 194 companies. Although if they had, they might not feel able to say so. In short, they say they're not worried about things when they compare themselves with Danske Bank and their own peers in Sweden.
That would seem to cover it, Ray.
It's hard to get behind the grammar of the SEB FAQ answers and understand in places what they're actually saying, and we might have unintentionally got it wrong. Perhaps our listeners have insights. If so, it would be good to hear their views.
It would, and we now have the new website up and running, and our social media editor, George, is manning our LinkedIn and Twitter feeds as well. And I do believe, Ray, that Mrs. Blake attends to the Dark Money Files Facebook page, so we have all bases covered.
We do indeed, Graham. So if you want to contact us through the website, through LinkedIn, through Twitter or through Facebook, you should find any of those quite easily. Just search online for the Dark Money Files and they will all be there.
And we must say we've noticed quite a surge recently in our numbers of listeners, so we must be getting something right.
And we have a constant trickle of suggestions for future programmes, which are always gratefully received, and where we feel we can talk cogently, acted upon. On which subject, Graham? What's next for the podcast?
Well, Ray, I think it's time we tackled risk assessment. We've been threatening to do this for weeks. So let's take a look at the very first pillar of customer risk assessment, geographic risk.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.